Hello, welcome along to week two of series four of the High Performance Podcast. As always, it's brilliant to have you joining us for your hit of inspiration, to be uplifted, to be educated, to hear other people's points of view, to find out what sort of a life someone has really lived rather than the life that we think they've all lived. This podcast is just about having a conversation with high achieving individuals that you simply don't hear anywhere else. And actually, this week's guest is so honest, so revealing, so vulnerable that I just want to get straight into a quick clip. This is what you can expect on this week's High Performance Podcast.
You're not happy with your job now. You keep on talking about wanting to leave. You look like you're not going any further up ladder. You're working for somebody else, right? Now, what are you going to do? You've got this idea. You know everything about it. You've got people to back you. Are you going to just sit on there and think of what could have been? Or are you actually going to do something about it?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
My favorite spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity that you get. You know, you think, have I really been living like that for so long? It's a bit like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. You just think, wow, how have I been affording to pay so much more? It is time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. And the quality of their mobile service in comparison to your old provider is special. You could be saving so much money. So say goodbye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, unexpected overages. You can use your own phone number, bring along all your existing contacts, and ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal, where you get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. So to get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/HPP. That's mintmobile.com/HPP. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/HPP. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gig on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
I really enjoyed this conversation. Don't forget that you can, of course, rate and review the podcast. We actually get some incredible comments, and we do our very best to read all of them. I just want to share this one with you. And it comes from Richie, and he says, "Hi, guys. I've never written anything to anyone like this, but I wanted to say thank you for the podcast. I discovered them back in the summer when I was going through a bad time with stress and depression. And this podcast and believing in the fault versus responsibility message and no excuses got me through. In the last month, my wife out of nowhere has left me without any signs or warning, and I find myself listening back to every single episode again multiple times as I find I get something from each one, and it's the only thing helping me through this time. It's inspired me to push forward, apply for promotion, and realize there's nothing I can do to change what has happened, but it's now my responsibility to change my life for the better in the direction I want." They've said thanks to us, but I think we should be saying thanks to them, because it's messages like that that inspire us to keep on going with the High Performance Podcast. It's not just conversations with people that have achieved great things. It's lessons from those people that you can apply to your own life. So please do rate the podcast, review the podcast. It makes such a difference to us. And we love you guys getting in touch and sharing your thoughts with us. Okay, let's do it then. Let's get into this week's episode. I just want to warn you before we get going that if you're offended by bad language, or if you're with children or other people who are offended, this week's guest does use quite a lot of colourful language. So be warned as we get going. But it is a remarkable episode nonetheless. I think it's probably one of my favourites. Let's do it. It's time for this week's High Performance Podcast. Hi there, I'm Jake Humphrey. You're listening to High Performance, the podcast that delves into the minds of some of the most successful athletes, visionaries, entrepreneurs, and artists on the planet, and aims to unlock the very secrets to their success. Everyone needs a professor in their life, and mine is also an author, an expert in the success of sporting teams and cultures. And you grew up in a boxing house, right?
Yeah, my dad was a boxing coach, so my playground from as early as I can remember was a boxing gym, Jake. So I'm really looking forward to this. I think that one of my favourite definitions of boxing is it's chess with gloves on, and it's about the best fighters are thinking fighters. So I'm really excited to meet somebody that is a thinking fighter.
Right, let's get into it then, and welcome a man who is currently the greatest featherweight fighter on the planet. You will know him for his work in the ring, but what about the man behind the world titles, his role as a father as well as a fighter? Who is the man who studied dentistry? What does he do in his sporting life to achieve success? What are his non-negotiable behaviours, and what does he do that you can apply in your life? Welcome to the High Performance Podcast, Josh Warrington. Nice to have you with us.
Very well done there, Jake. You've done this before, haven't you? A
couple of times. Right, come on then.
Honour to be here.
What is high performance?
It's a big question. It's a big question in what field, you know, in daily life, in sport.
What's high performance in your personal life?
High performance is being a good dad, being a good husband, providing for my family, being a good brother to my special needs brother, to my autistic sister, to my other brother who missed out his childhood. Maybe they had to sacrifice time with my dad when we're growing up, because my dad, you know, trained me as a young man. Being a role model, you know, being given that title in the public eye now, I have people spending their hard-earned money coming to watch me perform in under the bright lights in the ring, whatever. Being inspiring to the next generation and try to leave a legacy behind, you know. Those things and priorities have changed a lot over the years, but family has normally always been number one. And will probably continue to be so.
And how important has it been for you to have a dad who sacrificed so much to get you to be the fighter you are, but also to have family members who have special needs so that you have that daily reminder how lucky you have been? I wonder to what extent your family is your inspiration.
It's massive inspiration. I mean, listen, I won't blow smoke up my own backside, but I think I've always had a wiser on young shoulders. So I've always looked at life a little bit differently. When a young man, I used to spend a lot of time with my dad. He was like my best mate, you know. It wasn't like a father and son. We were more or less pals. Used to socialise a lot with him and his pals. So I'd be amongst an older mentality. And just, you get to see, you know, the sacrifices when you look at other families and how they're going about their business. And then you sit home at night and you realise, I'm spending so much time with dad, but Marks and Thomas aren't. You know, they're not spending as much time with him. And as you get older and you look back on that, you think, well, as I go forward in life, I've got to make sure that was all worth it, because there's one thing that you can't be given back, and that's time. So in a way, use that as motivation, especially throughout my pro career. I'm oldest out of my brothers and my sister. And later down the line, I look at it and think, maybe my brother might need help down the line in helping hand in getting a job or getting a house or whatever. So might my sister. So I want to build an empire. Obviously, I've got my immediate family. I've got my wife. I've got my kids. But I don't just feel like that's us and we'll close the door. I've always been a family man and I've always been close to my family. So, you know, I feel responsibility in that sense. And that is used in a motivation. I don't just solely rely on that, but it's added to the motivation when, you know, you're in the changing rooms hours before the fight. And you're thinking, why do I do this? Why am I not going to lose it tonight in the ring? It can be a very powerful tool, mate.
So one of our key phrases then, Josh, is we talk about this roots that give you wings to fly. And it sounds that your family gave you some pretty powerful roots in which you can still draw on today. What would you say were the most important things that when you describe that family and that legacy that you have to them, what is it that they did give you that have afforded you to go on and be so successful?
I think from a young lad, as a kid growing up in Leeds on, you know, a council estate, it's easy to fall into what everyone else is doing. So nicking cars, sniffing glue, you know, smoking, whatever, drinking on a Friday night. And why do you not want to do that? Everyone else is doing it. Why do you want to spend your time three times a week going to a boxing gym?
why don't you go play football with everyone else? As much as I would like to have played football, I just didn't have the talent. Walked into a boxing gym and played at it. Just an energetic kid.
How old were you when you were first
7 years old. Right. Energetic kid, you know, and grew up in the 90s watching like WWF. So watching people put steel chairs over their head, that were amazing to me. And I was just always playing fighting with my brothers. But my dad was like, right, we need to take that energy out of you. So I went into a boxing gym. But just like anything as a kid, you know, you go through fads and that. And my old fella used to turn around and say to me, listen, don't waste time. You're wasting my time for me taking you to the gym. He said, you're wasting the people who are looking after you in the gym. You're wasting their time. He said, if you're going to do it, don't do it. If you want to go and play with your mates, well, fucking go play with your mates. You can't come downstairs and say to me, Dad, I want to go to the gym tonight. And then I want to go 2 days later. He said, you either do it or you don't do it. And instantly it turned with me that. It didn't take much for me to, you know, I have to be told again. That would it. If I was going to be a boxer, then I was going to be a boxer. I think he said that about 8 years old, and I've been playing for about 2 years, but that would it. I was dedicated to it then. When I was getting into a teenage lad, hanging about with my mates, yeah, they'd be having a drink and going to house parties on Friday night. But instead of me having a drink, I'd take a bottle of water with me. You know, I'd take a bottle of Lucozade. Instead of getting the bus home, you know, bus 3 miles home, I'd jog home instead. And that was just my mentality. I didn't want to be wasting anyone else's time. I'd already seen that my brothers had sacrificed quite a lot.
Yep.
I'd already seen that, like, my dad coming home from work, then taking me to the gym, you know. So it wasn't as though I would try to do it to him, like, impress him as such, but I wanted to kind of thank him for the time already and obviously use that as an inspiration later down the line.
I remember I was fortunate to write a book a few years ago about Marvin Hagler. And I remember a quote that he'd spoken about boxers. Their motivation is one of three types. He talks about desperation, that you do it to escape something.
Yep, yep.
Rationalization, because it's where your best talents are best served. And then the third one, and he said this was the most powerful one, was inspiration.
Yeah.
The guys that have just found this place and they do it because they'd rather do that than anything else on earth.
Yeah.
So what was your inspiration beyond making the most of the time and the messages your dad had given you? What was it that boxing gave you?
I was about 3 foot until I was about 15. I'm still waiting to grow now. I'm still waiting to fucking get hairs on my knackers. But, you know, it was just one of them things where I grew up in a state where, like, if you had an older brother who was cock on the estate, then you were all right. You know, everyone fucking looked after you and that. I didn't have like older brothers. Like I say, I'm oldest out a lot. If you had a mum who'd spoil you, had best trainers on and the best tracksuit on, then you got treated a little bit differently. If you were going to chip in with your mates and go get a 10 bag, then you're part of that circle. I didn't do none of them things, but I still hung around that circle. You know, why? I don't know. But later down the line, I wanted to be better than that. I had my first fight week after my 11th birthday. And these fights used to take parts in working men's clubs up and down the country. You know, you'll know yourself, like, in the amateur days. And, you know, I get out of the ring a lot of time, you know, just want to fight, go pick up my trophy, be chuffed to bits with that, you know. I tried hard at school and I liked success. I liked win. I've always liked that winning feeling. And I'd get out of the ring, chuffed to bits with my trophy, and I'd be walking fast past folk, and I'd hear it up and down the country. Hey, young'un, come here, young'un. Wherever I want, whether it's up in Newcastle, over in Manchester, in Bradford, wherever, young'un, come here. Someone would always pull me over. Hey, tell you what, you keep going. You've got something there. Some of my dad's pals had used to say the same. Hey, keep on with your boxing. Don't get distracted with all this and this. Don't want to end up where I am. I used to look at these blokes and think, well, you present yourself well, you've got a car, what's wrong with being you? But I think you slowly realise that time flies by very quickly, and a lot of people were saying to me, stick at it. They once had a promising career in football, in sport or whatever. They were once a fresh-faced teenager without getting into drink and drugs or whatever, and all of a sudden, bam, 10 years have gone by. Mm-hmm. They're knocking on door to 30. They're still living at home in the mum and dad's back bedroom. You know, they haven't got a pot to piss in. And they're like, where's it all gone? Yep. You know, it were cool to be out off his head like a few years ago. All of a sudden, everyone's knuckling down. Everyone's got wives. Everyone's got mortgages. What am I doing? And I kind of taken that mentality of like, bloody hell, it does got to go quickly. So I didn't want to end up like every other lad off the estate where no one comes from this estate and does anything. But boxing, it gives you that thing where you're in control of what you do. And again, I took that mentality from a young age. I remember watching one lad in a championship fight, and he did fuck all for three rounds, and he got out and he cried his eyes out, and his mum and dad was screaming, "Robbery! He should have won that fight." But he didn't do anything.
Yep.
He didn't. It was three rounds and he hardly threw a punch. And I watched him that fight. Why is everyone carrying on round here when it's in his own destiny right there? If he wants to win the fight, throw the punches. So like for my mentality is I'm in there and there's another man in there, that's it. It's not like I'm relying on 10 other people alongside me. It's me and it's him. So just throw the punches. And
see, that's what fascinates me about your answers, though, on this, Josh, if you don't mind me interrupting.
No, go on.
That your relationship with time seems really interesting. That it's almost like you're racing against time to fill the time as much as you can, whether this is with setting a good example, looking after your brothers and your own children, or whether you're in a title fight, how do you fill that 12 rounds now in the most productive way possible?
Yeah, I don't know. I think his numbers, as a young kid, I had bad OCD. My mind would fucking wonder and ask crazy, crazy questions to myself. Like, what? Listen, 6-7 years old, I used to wake up and go downstairs, "Dad, why are we here?"
Right. And what answer did he get?
"What do you mean, lad? What are you asking me questions like? You've got school in the morning." I go back, but fucking, what happens to us when we die? Where do we go? You know what I mean? And obviously, teachers will tell you it's religion, you go up to heaven and blah, blah, blah. But they fucking don't know the answers. It's a scary question, isn't it? For a young kid to come asking in them kind of questions, why are we, how did you get made? Oh, you learn about it in science further down the years. But I don't know, mate. I just, I've always been a bit
obsessing
of a deep thinker.
Then at a young age about things that are totally out of your control.
100%, yeah.
Then suddenly you find something where you are absolutely in control.
Exactly.
And then you realise, hold on a minute, if I put the effort in, if I give this my all, then I can be successful. And that feels to me like that was maybe a revelation for you, that this was, for the first time in your life, something totally in your hands.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. And for a while, it was my outlay. You know, when I was in control of that, it wasn't like, nobody could say to me, "You're not playing today because you're not good enough, or you weren't good enough in training the other day, so you dropped." Listen, it's whatever you do in your training session, it don't matter, because it unlimits. So you walk into the ring. And, you know, when I grew up in Leeds, you know, and especially in my school, they wanted me, the boxer. So we're quite unique.
You liked being the guy at the party holding the water, and everyone going, "Why is he holding water?" "Well, he's a boxer, didn't you know?
Yeah.
And it just sort of put you on a pedestal that maybe you thrived on, that you still thrive on now.
I think you're right, to be honest with you, Jake. Maybe I didn't get it in other fields, so I looked for it in other ways, shapes and forms, and that was my get out to be different, just not being the same as everyone else. You know, I want I want the tallest, I want the best looking, even though I'm not a bad looking fella. I know what I mean? I didn't have like a lot of brothers who were, you know, cock on the state and that, so that was my little thing there, that was my unique, you know, person. But like at 16, I'm in that predicament. I've academically, when I first started school, I was on with what, A stars, this and other. By year 9, year 10, getting into GCSEs, everyone's starting to knuckle down. My head's on boxing. I'm just obsessed with it. Boxing, boxing, boxing. You know, going for, you know, 5-mile runs every night. I'm constantly in the gym, always thinking about, you know, the next opponent, the next thing. Dad saying little things like, "You need to go get that next run done. You know, do what your other man's not doing." Then I'd be visualising, you know, visualised from a young age. And then I've finished school. I've got 11 ATC GCSEs, but I don't fucking know what I want to do. You know, everyone's had their 2-year plan. They know what to do. They want to go to college. They want to do this, one, another. And I'm like, I've just hit a bit of a rut then. You know, I've kind of been doing this so much, and all of a sudden it stops. You're in school and it's just what you do. And then bang, it stops. What do I do now? So I remember someone coming in from the Marines talking about, sign up to Marines and we'll guide your path, we'll guide your life, this and other. I go, I don't mind doing exercise and you can box in Marines, and that appeals to me there. And my old fella said to me, "Listen," he said, "you know what? I know you're thinking about being a pro. It's a long time away, you know, a couple of years. You've got to be 18 in Britain to become a professional fighter." He said, "It might seem a long way now, but," he said, "just wait, be patient, give it a go." He said, if it don't work out for you, you can always go in the forces later down the line, be an officer or whatever. But I think you might have something there to do to move forward with the boxing. So just give it a go, Josh. And, you know, for a what seemed like a bit of a lifetime, I seemed to scratch my head every night, every time I went to bed, thinking about, you know, as a 16-year-old lad, it's life-changing decisions. Do you sign up for this life doing this and over, or do you just carry on holding, waiting for, you know, life as a boxer? And well, I mean, I took the latter. And,
but in hindsight, does that not sound obvious, given what Jake had just said about that you needed control? You needed to control your own destiny, and the Marines would in many ways have taken that control away from you.
It would have taken it away, but I think going through your teenage years and adolescent years and fucking hormones are all over the place and stuff like that. And I think it was just because everything had just been taken away from me. I've maybe comfortable because I had my boxing and I just school and it's just what you did. All of a sudden, you're thrown into a big wide world then. You know, 16, if you're not doing anything, what are you going to be doing? You're going to go sign on. And like I said to you, I didn't want to just become another product of the estate. I was like, I'm going to go get my gyro. You know, I wanted to make sure I could do something. And it seemed that I could just step straight into that and start making a difference there. All right, it wouldn't be uniquely about me, but I'd have a focus. And in end, I just fell into sixth form, started studying sports and psychology. I did a few months there, but I just lost the drive for studying. It wasn't wanted to do. I just wanted to be in the gym and that was it. But at the same time, you know, I've got a few brothers. My mum and dad have split up. You know, my dad's going out to work. All I was in his taxi. You know, he's trying his best to provide for us. I don't want to be relying on him. Dad can't tapping him up for a tenner. So I find myself getting a job as a dental technician in a lab. I don't know how I fell into the job. It would have just been the case of my old fella knew someone at the lab. Said, oh, can I just come up and just clean about, just do something? It just needs a focus. And that was it. Started working as that. And next minute, I've taken to it. And my gaffer turns around and says to me, listen, you're not half bad at this. He said, but if you want to carry on working and progress further into the company, you're going to have to qualify into it. So I ended up doing 4 years at Leeds University alongside.
See, now this fascinates me because boxing doesn't necessarily lend itself to stories like this. Like you casually said about your 11 GCSEs that you got and now you're signing up for 4 years at university. And yet I think the best fighters are the thinking fighters, like we said in the introduction. You think of someone like Lomachenko that sort of does an awful lot in terms of working on the brain as much as he does on his physical attributes. And I'm interested in that aspect of your development, that you obviously nurtured that intellect, that ability to keep thinking. How much do you think that helped you as a fighter?
Massively, massively. It's helped me throughout my pro career in every single field. You know, it's taken me throughout the levels to get to the level where I'm at now. I mean, turning pro, as a young amateur, I had aspirations to be to box for England. You know, I only wanted to have an England vest. When you're seeing lads pull up to shows and they had an England vest on, you thought they're decent then. And that's all I wanted. But by 16, I had aspirations of turning pro. But then it's always been small goals for me. You know, when you see a lot of young lads, not just in boxing, just in sport and everything, they want everything fucking yesterday. You know, they want to have instant success. Nobody wants to have the long slog. But that wasn't my mentality at the time. It was just a case of, right, let's just see how we go here. I'm Josh running from Leeds. I'm 18-year-old. I've got a bit of an amateur experience. You know, not got a big fan base or like that. I work as a dental technician, but I just want to see how far I can go. Set myself a few goals, win a British title. If I could, anything for a bonus after that would be get a house deposit, you know, put a car on the drive. You know, I'm working as an apprentice dental technician. You know, I'm on an all right wage for my age, but I want more. I want more.
So at this point, this has moved on from just enjoying boxing, hasn't it? This has now become a serious goal setting and then goal achieving for you.
Well, already I'm looking back. I'm 18, but I'm looking back and thinking, well, I've missed all them house parties. I've got to make this count for something now. All my pals are going off to be in college, university. Some of them are walking into apprenticeships and they're pulling in a few grand a month. And I'm looking at them thinking, wow, even though you're not competing against them, you look at your pals or I did anyway, as a bar to where to be at, and you want to be above that bar. So all of a sudden I've got my little career there with boxing. And yeah, there's other little things what are motivating now. I've met Natasha, my now wife. She's got a career in hospitality in Sheffield. She's working for Raymond Blanc's restaurant and the chain of them all over Leeds. She's eyeing her field. I'm saying to her, listen, if you're going to be with me, it's going to be an hard life. We're not going to be able to go off to parties week in, week out. We aren't going to be able to go out for meals, or we're going to have to sacrifice a lot of things. But if you stick by me, it'd be worth it. Unless, you know, just see how far
we can
go.
When you talk about sacrifice, what happened to those relationships with the friends of yours that didn't come on the journey with you?
It was just one of them. Josh does his boxing. Josh does his boxing.
Did you have to let people go though from your life?
Yeah, 100%. And you become selfish. You become very selfish. You don't see nobody. But then boxing's a weird sport because ultimately you turn around and you need them. Because, and Damien will know this from his dad, that when you're fighting shows, you need to sell tickets for you to get paid. You sell a few tickets where you can put a bit of money into the pot, then yeah, we'll have you on show. You'll have you on show. So as a fighter going forward, yeah, I want to be on part of them big
shows. So you always had these goals. And that's what I think is really fascinating, is that you are a goal setter and then a goal achiever. And most people would sit here and go, I'd love to be a world champion at something. Oh, I'd love to have a Ferrari. Oh, I'd love to have a big house. Or I'd love to have a private jet. But then don't do anything to go and achieve those things.
Yeah,
they
forever
remain just an ambition. But you clearly went and targeted those things. So I guess that comes down to self-belief. And I really want to touch on this subject with you now, how important it was for you to always believe that this would happen.
Didn't always believe it was going to happen, because you have setbacks. You have setbacks in life. And like you say there, everybody, certainly in this day and age, in this millennial age, they want instant success, instant gratitude. Fucking give me a pat on the back. Look what I've just done. Well, I was working like at the bottom of the chain as a dental technician. Some of my pals at work used to call me a process worker. Now, when we talk about inspirations from outside, obviously I had my internal goals. I wanted to be proud of myself. I wanted to make my family proud. I wanted to make my dad proud. I wanted to have the finer things in life, because I put everything in, 100% everything to what I did. I remember one of the lads in work, we were having a bit of banter one day, and he said, listen, Josh, he says, all you're going to be in life, right, is a fucking process worker. You're not going to do anything. And I remember turning around to him at times and said, listen, when I get to your age, I think you're around 27, listen, I'll have done this. I'll have achieved more than you've ever dreamed of in my life, and I'll have got this, this, and this. And I didn't always put it down to material position, but no, I was just letting him know where I was.
But you believed it, though. That's the key thing.
I believed it, because I was willing to put the time, effort, and effort in. Listen, there were times I'd come out of the gym with a black eye, a bush lip, a fat nose, and you think, oh, I'm never going to achieve that goal. But then it was something, again, what I've learned from a young age in the boxing. I'd come away from that and I'd want to do better in the next session. As a kid, I remember getting chinned in gym, crying as I'm moving around the ring. I'm getting beat up by this lad a few years older than me. He's popping my nose. I'm getting out of the ring. My dad blended. He used to be honest with me, he'd say, oh, fucking shite that lad. I'm being carried on my own. Shite that. Shite. For 2 days, I'm thinking, my pal say, you coming out to play, Josh? I'm like, I'm in my bedroom, shadow boxing. Oh. Fucking obsessed. You're going to learn hard in boxing, mate. You're getting punched at first. I didn't want to go back to the gym on that following session and have another beating and get embarrassed in front of everyone else. So I've gone to my bedroom and I'm bloody shadow boxing. I'm picturing what's going to happen in this next sparring session. It doesn't mean shit, it's a sparring session, but for me, it's personal pride. So I'm going back in that next session and I make him cry. All of a sudden, I felt a massive relief. What have I done different there? Well, I've put a little bit more time into myself. I've had a little bit more belief in myself. Confidence has gone up a little bit more. And that seemed to happen throughout my amateur days. You know, it got to a stage at one point, I walked into the shows, I didn't have an ounce of nerve into me. And then I tried to roll that over into the pro career, but then I'm at the bottom of the pond again now. So I've got to get to the top, but you've got to make it happen. And I used to just take every little bit, every little step in my career, one bit at a time. Maybe one good thing of having my manager with me, Steve, and my dad, they didn't want me to be fed the easy fights. You know, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it this way. We're going to do it the proper way. I had like a proper apprenticeship. So in there with testing fights at a young age, tight fights that had pushed me and I'd learned a lot through. I come out, what could I have done better? I've always been obsessed with wanting to better myself.
See, but I think that makes you exceptional, because you're saying it as if it was natural to you. But in my experience, I think that what you often see with, say, some young fighters, some of the young athletes that we've met here is that when they get beat, whether it's in the gym, in sparring, or in a real life fight, they quickly look to point the finger at who can they blame, whether it's a coach or the manager for overmatching them or the promoter for not giving them the right opponent. And yet what you're describing is a theme that we come over time and time again on the podcast, which is responsibility, absolute responsibility, and looking at yourself before you point the finger at anyone else.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I realised that a fair few times. My dad could constantly give me a reminder of that. There was no excuse. And we're driving home from, and we've just travelled over to Manchester to spar some kids in there. Just drove over to Liverpool. Got work in the morning. He's got work in the morning. Fucking chat that lad. You weren't doing a thing I told you to. Why not? I don't know, Dad. You better find that reason, because when you come to 3 weeks' time and you're fighting and you've sold all them tickets to your pals to come watch, if you don't fucking find the reason there, then you're going to get found out. And that was my mentality again. You know, when you walk into the ring, you can't complain about, oh, I wish I'd have done this, I wish I'd done that. That's it. Now it's happening. You're going to get found out there. You, even when at the early stages, like I say, we're having some testing fights at a young age. I wasn't just having like noddies to blast out and make my record look good. I was having testing fights. Some of these fighters were coming for the win. Some of them were novices themselves and they were after the win. So it was a case of, if I don't do anything about it, I ain't got no one else to rely on it. My dad can say whatever he wants in the corner. He can say, pick it up. If I ain't got the engine to do so, who's that down to?
And I'm not surprised you have this mindset, because we've already spoken about the fact that you love boxing because you were able to be responsible for your own success. And I think that when we look at blame or we look at fault and things like that, we have almost a comfy relationship with blame, I think, a lot of people. And actually, if you look at it as in a totally different way, if you look at it as giving up control, which is what it is, as soon as you start blaming your bed for not sleeping well, or blaming the driver that drove you to the thing, getting caught in traffic, or blaming the food that someone else cooked for you that you didn't like, so you didn't eat it, so you didn't have the energy, all you're doing is giving up responsibility, giving up control. Yeah. If we can try and live in a world where we take ultimate control for things that are our responsibility and things that aren't our responsibility, then it gives us the opportunity to be more successful. I wonder whether that's something that you noticed from quite a young age.
100%, yeah. Yeah, whatever you... It starts with you. It has to start with you. It's your life. You know, it's
what are you like then now with people who look for fault and look for blame and blame other people? Are you quick to explain to them the way the world works?
In obviously listening to the stories and the circumstances, then, you know, take a decision from there. I always try to look at out of other people's shoes and see it from their scenarios. So somebody might make a rash decision. You know, you have human error, but then there could be other factors what influence that. If someone's just lost a job, and then they've been having an hard time off the partners.
Still their responsibility, though.
It is still their responsibility, but I guess sometimes they need to come through them hardships and the hard times to become stronger inside mentally. And I feel like I had mine as a young boxer. That's where I was able to get my hardship and my and toughened mentality. Listen, when you lose a fight as a kid, I mean, it's not the most important things, but as a 14, 15-year-old lad, fucking hell, you cry your eyes out for days. You know, you've just been banished. You're going to school the next day when reputation's everything. You're telling all your pals you've just been beat. It's embarrassing, you know, and how do you get over that? You know, well, you can become stronger. You try to be, you know, more confident in that. Then other little factors in my household, my mum, I used to go home from school and as a 14, 15-year-old lad, my mum and dad would be screaming house down. You know, I didn't want to walk into that environment. To everyone else, to my pals, oh yeah, Josh has got a nice mum and dad, blah, 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 to the inside factor. It was a fucking war zone. Didn't want to go home. But what do you do? Do you sit and cry about, oh, my mum and dad are splitting up? Well, it's life. It happens. And it just fucking toughens you up. And sometimes people's lives just don't go about that. You know, if you just had a steady life where you've been to school and then you've left school and you've gone to college and you've gone to uni, and you've not really come up to you know, much challenges. And the most challenges that you've had of like, well, which fucking pair of trainers do I buy? Or, can I go to that gig this weekend or not? Well, it's not really life lessons, life challenges. You're not going to learn so much from that. Bam, all of a sudden, fucking landlord's asking for his rent and you can't afford it because you've just been sacked from your job. That's a life lesson.
Well, there's an old saying in boxing, isn't there, Josh, that like you find out somebody's character when they've been put on the backside.
Yeah.
So, you know, anyone can knock over, like you say, novices or or fighters have been brought in for you to do that and look good against, the real test of your character is how you weather the storm when those difficult moments happen. And I'm interested in terms of, you made a comment before about having to learn to manage your nerves so that you're obviously an intelligent lad and you can bring that thinking mindset into your fights. How did you go through that process of learning to control those nerves to be able to be ice cold in your execution?
Trying to jog my memory back from a kid, you take bits of confidence from having victories in the ring. You take bits of confidence when you're sparring and you're working alongside people who are better than you as a younger lad. So my dad never wanted me to just go in and spar with lads my own size and weight, beat them up and then, yeah, give me a pat on back. You know, he'd always find reason or room to criticise. And then I wanted praise off my dad. I wanted him to say, fucking well done, that lad. But he always wanted to push me as well. So I'm not sparring lads my own weight. I'm sparring lads that are heavier than me, more experienced than me. And I'm having hard nights. But then when it comes to the fight, that's where he's a bit of mastermind as a, you know, fucking psychologist, as my dad and as a trainer worked. And like, so he used to say to me, walking to the ring, he said, this lad's not been mixed in the same company as what you've mixed in. Right. You've been mixing with pros. You've been sparring with lads who are national champions. What has this lad done? He's not even got to our level. And you're thinking, he hasn't been on the same level. He hasn't put the same kind of work in. All of a sudden you start adding that and then you get a win, then another win, and another win. And that keeps on building and keeps on building.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Today's show is brought to you in association with Mindlift, the most personalized brain training app that can help improve your focus and your relaxation. So Mindlift is neuroscience based. And what I love about Mindlift, I've been using it for a while now, is that it's totally personalized to me. So if you're interested in optimizing your health, I would recommend you check out Mindlift. And don't just take my word for it. Take the word of the elite athletes and the industry leaders who use it. So Mindlift accesses brain sensing technology, games and videos that correspond to your brain's activity. Honestly, it's fascinating. You wear a smart headband which measures your brain activity and gets you a personalized routine to sharpen your mental fitness. I've been using it first thing in the morning, and genuinely, when I go into early meetings or I've got lots happening in a day, I notice the difference. I'd love you to start your personalized program at mindlift.com/high performance and you will get $40 off your first subscription. That's mindlift.com/high performance.
My favorite spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity that you get. You know, you think, have I really been living like that for so long? It's a bit like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. You just think, wow, how have I been affording to pay so much more? It is time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text and data for $15 a month. And the quality of their mobile service in comparison to your old provider is special. You could be saving so much money. So say goodbye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, unexpected overages. You can use your own phone number, bring along all your existing contacts, and ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal, where you get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/HPP. That's mintmobile.com/HPP. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/HPP. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gig on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
So now when you're fighting Ellen Road and you've got thousands of people there for you,
yeah,
you know, that a fight's never won on that ring walk, but it can be lost. What are you doing at those moments now? So that was what you're doing as a young amateur. Mm. What are you doing now to control your nerves and give you that confidence that you're going to go in there and the world is going to see the best version of Josh Warrington?
You know, you set your own little goals, your little areas where you want to be in. Kept going from there, confidence builds. You get to the next stage. All of a sudden, bang, you're on world level. Bloody hell, Josh, you were never meant to win a British title. You weren't good enough. You weren't strong enough. You hadn't knocked anybody out. You're not fast enough. You know, you're just a ticket seller. Things what have taken years and years to build up, you know, time that I'll never get back, is all got to that level now. And all of a sudden, you're fighting Ellen Road, you're in front of 20,000 people, you've convinced them all that you're going to win that world title that night, but you're a 4-1 underdog in a 2-horse race. You haven't been beaten in 25 fights, but you're still 4-1. You aren't going to, the boxing world think that you aren't going to pray. You know, you're going to get your head boxed off, you're going to get stopped, you're going to do this. You've got all these outside things pecking at your head. But by this time, I'd practiced many things. Visualization, meditation. I was able to center myself. I was able to block out things. And people from the outside, oh, Josh is cool as a cucumber. He's got to this stage without no pressure. He looks blistering, he's up blinding, but I don't realize mentally I've been on a fucking roller coaster. You know, prior to that, I've just been given opportunities. Right, you've got a short English title, do you want it? It's away from home. It's in his backyard, do you want it? Yeah, we'll do it. Yeah, you're smiling to everyone. Yeah, I'm confident I'm going to go down. Really and truthfully, in change rooms on that night, you're thinking, am I good enough? This is going to be tough. In the fight itself, you having to push yourself. You having to find little gears where you didn't know you had and push yourself even further. You come through that, you go on to a next level. You're fighting for Commonwealth. You're fighting for British. You're fighting for European. Fast forward a fair few years, the Lee Selby fight's being built up. No one's giving me a cat and mouse chance. For what reason, I don't know. Because I'm Leeds, because I've got a big fan base, whatever. Lee Selby's meant to box me head off. My career was all on that fight. Josh Warrington loses this fight. Never mind, he's won British, Commonwealth, European, WBC. He's had 5 defences. He loses this fight. That's it. I just become a new dad as well. It wasn't just fighting for myself. It was like, I'm fighting for them too now. I'm fighting for my little girls. I'm keep ticking boxes off. I've got myself an house. But now, if I win this fight, bloody hell, I can get into them dreamland paydays where Marcus and Megan, bloody hell, if they ever need to say, Josh, we need somewhere to live, don't you worry about it. Hey, listen, jump in one of that. These are one of my houses. I could go and pay my dad's mortgage off. These are all the motivations. It all comes from winning these fights. I'm putting pressure on my own shoulders. But like I say, I'd visualised it many times. I'd been sat for years and years thinking, when this moment comes, this is how it's going to come out. It got to a stage where I was fucking dreaming about it. I'd focused that much, and I've always been massive on visualisation. You know, that thought process has got to go somewhere. It's energy. I'd meditated over it. I'd learned to handle pressure of the crowd. So by the time the world title fight come, I was padded.
But when you're doing that ring walk, right?
Yeah.
For that huge fight against Lee Selby, and like you've said, everything that you've ever done has come down to that moment, and you knew that was make or break for everything you'd ever achieved and everything you will go on to ever achieve.
Yeah.
All of the struggles and all the difficult things leading up to that point, from living on the estate and being different to everyone else, having siblings with mental health problems, from scrapping and fighting and getting punched on the nose when you were a kid, all of that discomfort, all of those moments where you might have failed along the way, that gave you the bulletproof moment when you walked out on the ring.
Definitely.
So is the message for people listening to this who want to achieve more from life but always shy away from discomfort, is that perhaps seeking the discomfort is where the growth lies?
Yes. You have to take the self out of the comfort zone, because growth is not going to happen. You're not going to get big biceps if you don't pick up the weights and put yourself through that pain. People in this day and age are scared of failure. They're scared of setback. They're scared of being told no. You know, they're scared of people making them go through obstacles to get there. They don't want that. They want it to be handed on a plate. Like I say, the most honest lesson that you can get, in my scenario, he's been punched in the face. You know, if you're not willing to do things properly, then you're going to get exposed. Not only are you going to get exposed, it's going to hurt. You're going to have a black eye, you're going to have a bust nose, you're going to have to be winded. And you can't get any more honest than that. Don't get me wrong. As a time as being a dental technician, I didn't want to fail at that either. And there were times when I was saying to my gaffer, you know, I'm coming late, and he's saying, Josh, this ain't good enough. I mean, I have to put the hours in, and I don't finish at 5. I don't do 9 to 5. I do 10 while 6. Give him that hour back. Sometimes I'll give him an extra half hour because I've got to show initiative. I've got to say thank you because I've been given this opportunity. Some other people might not be as lucky. And after fights, when I want in camp, then if he wants to make a work a 12-hour day, then I'm working a 12-hour day, because you've got to realise that you show initiative, it gets you a lot further in life than just tossing off and getting through the day as quick as possible. All them bit of setbacks, putting yourself out of your own comfort zone, they pay a dividend. I spent my 21st birthday with a British champion who knocked the likes out of Michael Gomez, who Damien knows very well, in a 12-foot ring, getting bashed up by him. Yeah. Why did I do that? Well, because I wanted to be great. I wanted to be better.
What does the Marines say? Everybody wants to go to heaven. Nobody's prepared to die. We all want the good, but we're not willing to put up with the bad.
Exactly. You know, if you want to have the finer things in life, or if you want to have that little bit more freedom or a little bit more time than you are, you're going to have to sacrifice a lot of things. You know, you're never going to be given it just there on a plate. You have to make that time. Unless you're born into, unless Jeff Bezos is your dad, then, you know.
Yeah, but you know, even then though, that's not the answer. Because you've done really well,
probably,
right? You'll have a lot of money in the bank. Your job now is to build resilience into your kids. That's your next challenge.
Yeah, you are right, to be honest with you. Because
have you got any idea how you might do that?
Just not fucking spoil them and try and give them, you know, as I said, I want my kids go to, I mean, this is not pointing to any kids who do go to private school, but, you know, stick with state schools. My missus did a lot of studying and she has reasons and arguments for why, you know, state schools, private schools, whatever. But I think you have to set challenges. I remember reading about Richard Branson as a young age. His mum and dad used to drop him off. I probably wouldn't do the same now in this day and age, but he used to drop him off miles away from his home and say, find your way home. You know, it's setting them challenges, taking them out of your comfort zone. My dad would say the same to me as a kid. I want you to go run to this place and I'll be fucking miles away from home and then get yourself back. But you can't monocle, you know, your children.
Have you heard the phrase helicopter parenting? Have you heard this?
Yeah.
Like parents who hover around their kids all the time, ensuring that they never fail at anything. And I think this whole conversation with you has been about the positive that comes out of failing, because that's where the growth lies.
Yeah, it is massively. Nothing teaches you more so than your own life experiences. People said to me, there's not like having you when you have your own kids, time passes and you say, yeah, you try to realize that as much as possible, but you actually don't realize until you have kids of your own, you know, and these things in different scenarios, walks of life, business sectors, whatever. It's experience and downfalls. It's how you bounce back from them as well. These rainy days, they do come, but they don't always last forever. And if you're persistent enough, keep chipping away, then eventually you will leave that path behind. You will leave that bad place behind. You will keep climbing the ladder, but you've got to get over them bad days. You've got to get over them tired days. Bloody hell, as a young lad, going to work, knackered, going to gym, knackered, going to university, falling asleep, but thinking to myself, it'll all be worth it in the end. And I remember going to drop some tickets off to one of my pals and I picked him up and everyone going to this party on the weekend coming. And I remember saying to him, oh, you must be buzzing for this party. I'm gutted I can't go. I went, oh yeah, you'll be training, what are you getting ready for your fight? He says, yeah, how's it going? I said, yeah, I'm just a bit tired. And he looked and he said, listen, mate, don't fucking worry about this party. He said, same old, isn't it? The same old. I said, yeah, I know, but everyone's going to be there and I just wish I'd go in. And I think he just said to me, listen, same old. We've been doing the same thing since we were 18. For 3 years, we've been going to same places, same people, doing the same thing, getting pissed, having an hangover. It's fucking boring. So let me tell you now, from my point of view, any one of us, what looks at you and thinks, how does he do it? And we all look at you and think, wow, we could be in our shoes. You know what? I wish I'd have not got into this drinking and carried on with my contract with Yorkshire Hammers as a footballer. Because who knows? I could have been somewhere where you are now. Fucking hell, it would have kicked up the ass what I needed just at that moment in time. Just one of my pals who normally talks a lot of shit and just tells you the worst jokes in the world, all of a sudden he's giving me a lesson live, but it was enough to give me a massive boost. I'm not missing out on much here. Yeah, it might look glamorous, everyone going out and getting pissed, and like people do it now on the social media. Their Instagram life is absolutely fantastic. As soon as they put that down and the post down, fuck me, I'm bored now. What do I do now? They're not. Everyone's not living that perfect life. Everyone is going through some hard times. Just focus on your own. And from there on, I'm thinking, I'm not missing out on fuck all. And I've got to make this time what I'm doing, this hardship, and make it all worthwhile. I don't want to turn around in 3 years' time and I've just been chinned and my career's more or less done. I want to make sure I've turned around in 3 years and I'm just going on to the next level. All that hardship that I've come through, will it have been worth it?
Wow, what a special message that was from you, mate. Massive, massive. Like, as you're saying it, the hairs on the back of mine are standing up there.
I think you have to listen. You have to listen, whether it's I had advice off Ricky, and when I were boxed, when I come away from that Dennis Tabeiron fight, I went over to him after. I was getting absolutely slated on social media. The pundits, the Sky pundits, slagged me to the ground. I didn't know how to handle it. And he said to me, he said, why are you getting worked up? Why are you getting worked up by these people? They're not in your life. When Dave Decorator or John Sparky goes on with his life, his pleasure is going onto social media and slagging you off. He says, don't you get worked up by it. Concentrate on your life, because the career where you're going, the path that you're on, in a few years' time, when you're going home to your big house and you don't have a mortgage and this and other, are you going to be still worried about them then? You know, they probably don't get a fuck off the missus. Do you know what I mean? He said, why are you getting so worked up about it then? Brilliant. And, you know, it's little taking little things in from that, like that. Obviously, hearing stuff like that from Rick were
There's two choices in life. You can either do it, or you can stand on the sidelines and criticise people that
exactly, and I think that's where I got to. By the time I'd left university and this and over, it was a case of that. You either just get on with it, crack
but
on with
social
it,
social media
don't.
Not the equivalent of the kids on your council estate? Do you know what I mean? Like the kids that are doing the weed or the you know, drinking on a Friday night or robbing a car. Social media is the equivalent of those kids, isn't it?
And definitely.
At 8 years old, you were making a decision, I'll follow my own path here. So there's something consistent about your decision. Don't worry about some troll on social media making a comment about you.
It's your life. What happens to this world when my lights get switched off at final time? Does we all still exist? Does, you know, you find as life goes on, and I'd noticed that by the time I was 15, that some people, you know, you'd see them in the gym and then they'd be off it. And then next minute, oh, have you heard about him? Oh yeah, he's just being looked. He's on tag. He's only 14. He's on bleach tag. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You'd see that people come and go in part of your life.
It's not been a bad thing maybe for you to see people make those mistakes.
No, not all. Not all, because your own experience, your own life is the best teacher. But you can take little bits off other people. I've seen fighters who have earned enough money to have paid the mortgage off. You know, have a decent car on drive, and they've spunked it up the wall. And I remember thinking that, I don't want that. I want to have people around me like that. So I've always kept a small circle. I have thousands of people coming to watch me, but my best of pals are still always a tight circle. In the early days, people used to say to me, you want to go to the next level? You need to get rid of dad. Not experienced enough. I used to think to myself, hold on a minute. I've got ears and I've got eyes. I can see what's going on around me. What he says to his fighter and what my dad says to me as a fighter in instruction, what my dad says makes sense. What he's saying to him, fucking hell, it don't make sense whatsoever. So how do you know who's right for me, who's wrong for me? It's your decision, it's your life. All right, I could have taken that in and had a little think about it, but I had enough experience to know what we're right and wrong there. Not like outside influence like that affects me.
I love that. I love the loyalty as well.
The responsibility again.
Yeah, exactly. There's some huge things.
You're only responsible for your own actions. Don't be going fucking blaming other people. If you're not, like, if you're listening to this and you're working in that dead-end job, mate, I've had it earlier in the year with one of my best pals. And I said, just sat him down. I said, right, listen, mate, you're not happy with your job now. You keep on talking about wanting to leave. You look like you're not going any further up ladder. You've been there over 8 years now. You're working for somebody else, right?
Now, what are you going to do? You've got this idea. You know everything about it. You've got people to back you. Are you going to just sit on there and think of what could have been? Or are you actually going to do something about it? If you do something about it, then in 2 years' time, it might not have worked. And you think, you know what? I had a go at it and it didn't work out. And then you're back in your job until someone else comes along. But if it does work, all of a sudden, you're your own gaffer. You're in control of what you're doing. You're having to do them overtime shifts on a Saturday and Sunday. You're not having to come home from work at 9 o'clock at night. You can dictate. The hours that you're putting in now, you should be getting rewarded from that a lot more with the pay packet, a lot more with growth. You should be seeing your business grow, not of somebody else's business grow, not getting rewarded from that. I went quiet for a few weeks. Next minute, bam, this is my logo. Yes. This is my website. Bam, bam. 6 months down the line, it's going stronger than ever.
Brilliant.
It's going stronger than ever. Don't wait till, you know, tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Get it done now. I've seen enough and I listened enough to know that anything can happen. You might be fucking plain sailing and you might be comfortable with that, but just be prepared for that rainy day. Have a plan B, because a lot of people don't at this day and age.
Josh, on the podcast, we ask a quick fire round of quick fire questions for you.
Yeah.
The first one is, what are the 3 non-negotiable behaviours that you and the people around you have to buy into?
Okay, honesty. I think loyalty. And I think they've got to be driven. They've got to hunger.
What advice would you give to a teenage Josh just starting out?
It'll all be worth it. Just that. If I could go back now and see myself coming home from gym or from work or whatever, with a black eye or whatever, tired, thinking, blah, blah, just it'll be worth it, pal.
How did you react to your greatest failure?
Let's do better. Let's do better. Obviously, not failed as such in the ring, but any times that I think I could have done better, it's just get onto it straight away. Yeah, I think if you the longer that you let it dwell, and I'm not being quick fired here, but the longer that you let it dwell and just let it fester in corner, that'll just do something about it straight away. And as soon as you start doing something about it, you'll feel better instantly.
Are you happy?
Yes. Yes, very happy. Winning the British title, I said I could have died an happy man. But then you want more. Hunger goes on. European, world. Walked in after winning world title, put that down. I used to have the mindset of wanting to just, I'd do whatever it takes to win, to die in the ring. If as long as my arm gets raised, obviously my mindset still is hungry, but I've got a family now and you know, I want to see my girls and their lives. But yeah, I'm happy where I am. I'm at the very pinnacle of my sport. I mean, bloody old Jack, I used to listen to you on do interviews on BBC Radio 1. When I'd been running that morning and I've got 2 buses to work and like fucking Newsbeat comes on and Jake Humphries doing F1 bulletin. Now I'm talking to you. Do you know what I mean? And in a podcast you've got me on as a guest. This stuff is all pinching myself, and that's not me being humble. That's just being appreciative of what I have right here. So I'm happy.
How important is legacy to you?
As it goes on, the more people I speak, the more people I reach. Massive. Massive. I'm honest and I continue to see it. Messages on social media, people I meet at press conferences, meet and greets. You know, it's funny that you're put in this position and, you know, all of a sudden you're not a human being, you're a robot. And I think while people are paying their hard-earned money to see you and they're reading about you, blah, 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 you've got a position to influence other people. And sometimes you don't realise, but every little action you have has a reaction to other people. And, you know, I've had people come up to me happy that I'd said this or I've replied to them a message on social media. They've been going through that place, have contemplated taking their life, and they've just, it's rebuilt their energy or it's given them a lift and outlook on life. And people say, you know, I've gone off at fucking rails, but I've just signed up to Forces. You know, some people just need that bit of advice. Like I had my advice back off one of my pals when I was 21. Yeah. Sometimes hearing certain things can just trigger something upstairs in the grey matter. So I'm willing to spend that time and use my position as good, and that all comes from a legacy. You know, me and my old fella did a bit of a talk earlier in the year
We fucking raised a few thousand pounds for us, for the children's hospital. We just had a laugh in a pub. Fuck me, and we've raised a few grand for a charity. You know what I mean? If you can do that with a life, I've had fights and it's become folktale. Those who were there at Ellen Road, those who went to Berlin, those who were at the Carl Frampton fight, it's, do you remember being at that Josh Warrington fight? I'm putting my bit of life and energy into other people's life and they're making memories from that. So, you know, it all comes down to legacy.
And finally, your one golden rule to live a high performance life.
Big questions these, Jake. They're not.
Yeah, I know.
I think you have to adapt. I could say consistency, but sometimes consistency in the wrong field, you'll never get to the destination where you want to. So there is going to be times when you have to adapt. And it's funny, I've just been listening to an audio book, The Legacy, James Carr, and he talks about All Blacks. You know, when you're on top of your game, change your game. Adaptation, I'd probably say, for my performance life.
I really like that. Listen, thank you so much for your time, for your honesty. I think that, you know, we've done a lot of episodes of this podcast now, and the things that we draw out from our conversation with you, which is taking responsibility, dealing with setbacks, emotional control, believing in yourself, all of those things are conversations that repeat themselves time and time again on this high performance podcast. And you are the absolute epitome of what you can achieve if you take control of your life. And it's amazing to sit here and discuss it with you and reflect with you. And I think, you know, I speak for both Damien and myself when I say that it's clear this story is far from over and we look forward to seeing what the future holds for you.
Appreciate that, Jake. Top man.
Damien, Jake, I think we talk a lot about responsibility on this podcast. One of my eternal frustrations are people who are waiting for the right moment in their life to live the life they want. And you have that conversation with Josh, and it is all about someone who is just creating the life he wants today, right now, no waiting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, that theme that came out of his conversation there was about time and the finite nature of time, and therefore, how do you fill it with the most productive behaviours that you can? So we were speaking to him there just as we wrapped up about the fact that he sits there and thinks a fight is 36 minutes long, and how can he fill each of those 36 minutes with the most productive, destructive behaviour that he can inflict on his opponent? But I think that's a metaphor for life. How do you fill each minute with the best version of you?
And it may well be that you fill it with the best version of you in the end, but along the way, you fill it with a failing, struggling, stumbling, learning version. And that's what he talked about as well. I think people that are listening to this thinking, I'm just too scared to do what I really want to do. He is a prime example of someone who has basically conquered the world and become a world champion by failing.
Very much. You know, think about his story there about, you know, this is a kid from a council estate that's made a decision. How do I differentiate myself? How do I break this cycle of a life that I don't want to lead? And he's gone in and he's gone into boxing, that is a brutal sport to make mistakes in. And yet he's taken those blows, he's taken those black eyes, those lessons in the gym. And rather than then seek to blame somebody else or say that he's not good enough, that question he was asking himself of how do I get better tomorrow? How do I learn from that? Is such a powerful, powerful message for anybody listening to this. Failure is part of the process. It's not the outcome.
I'm sure the estate where he grew up is full of pride for what he's achieved.
Yeah, definitely. You know, he's a guy that, like he said, 25,000 people turning up at Ellen Road don't come because they're necessarily boxing aficionados. They come because they're seeing a kid that embodies the very best of what we would all aspire to be.
Jake, how are you?
I'm really well, mate. Really well. Thanks very much. Do you know what's been interesting this week is the number of people, and I guess having had a few weeks off, it was always going to happen. People saying, I've just discovered this podcast for the first time and I can't believe what I'm listening to.
I know. It's a real delight that there's people coming to this for the first time. And I think it's like, you know, when you discover an author and then you realise they've got a back catalogue that you think, oh, great, I've got all these that I can go and explore. And hopefully our new members of our community have been able to go back over the first three series and discover a real treasure chest of insights and ideas from some incredible high performers.
I think it's also important to remind you all that you can actually watch the interviews as well. We've got a YouTube channel. Just search High Performance Podcast on YouTube. I like going on there myself, Damien, because I've obviously listened to quite a few of the episodes, but when I go and watch the conversations that are being had, it's sort of, you sort of see the passion even more from the guests, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, that old saying that the eyes are the windows to the soul. And I think when you can see their eyes light up at certain moments when they're replaying their successes or equally their passion to put things right when things have gone wrong and just how open they've been has just been incredibly humbling to be in the presence of.
It's been great, hasn't it? Let's go to a few comments this week. A quick reminder, if you can rate and review the podcast, if you like what you hear, it isn't just an ego thing. It actually genuinely helps the podcast to reach more people, to grow, to be more successful. So please, 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 if you can, rate and review the pod. There's a nice one here, Damien, from Standby G21, who got in touch on Apple Podcasts and simply titled this Game Changer. And they said, I picked this up by chance, but I've absolutely loved it. The depth of answers you get from these people is incredible, especially in a world where people in the public eye are reluctant to be honest. Listening to this has allowed me to change my mindset and focus on successful outcomes in business and at home, compartmentalizing what I need to do to achieve my maximum potential and success. I love them. I can't wait to listen to more guests. We're getting lots of comments like that. What, from your perspective though, Damien, when I first called you up and said, look, I want to do a podcast and I want it to be about high achieving individuals, what did you want people to get out of this? What was it about for you?
I think it was that idea that high performance, there's no secret to it. I think that's a phrase that you used in our initial conversation, Jake. There is no secret. It's about hard work. It's about having a passion. It's about commitment. It's about perseverance, resilience, being smart, learning from it. And I think I've been lucky enough to have seen that at close quarters, as you have. And I think to share to people that the people that are achieving high performance are no different from us. They don't understand the secret that we don't. It's just about they've got all those characteristics that are trainable and repeatable, that anyone can adopt them in their own lives at their own level that they're at.
And I think we get tricked by failure. I think that failure makes us think that if we've experienced it, we're either on the wrong path or we're not good enough or it's not for us. The thing that has stood out to me from what the 30 plus odd episodes that we've done is that failure is obviously there for all of our guests, but the key thing for them is their relationship with that failure, the desire to seek it, the acceptance that it's going to be around. And I think that that is such an important message for people to hear.
Definitely. I was talking to somebody recently about this very point where I said to them, if you want to be good at something, it depends on how long you're prepared to be shit at it for. Because there will be a period where you go through it, where you're failing, you're falling, you're making mistakes. But you have to persevere at that level and keep learning from it before you can reach that level of knowledge. And I think that's what all our guests are telling us about, that they didn't start out at a high level. They persevered through that valley of humility where they were making mistakes and they were poor at it.
And of course, failure is only useful if we learn from the failure. I remember Matthew McConaughey on this podcast when he talked about his mum going, Mum, if I keep running around the track and I keep stepping in shit every single time, I'm not learning from my mistakes. And we've had a few nice messages about that actually this week, with people sort of picking up on what Casper spoke about, Casper Schmeichel, on last week's episode. Andy CR1878 said, a great high performance podcast to start season 4 with Casper, dealing with millimeters of failure every day. He then says, I still think Casper is 20, not 34. It was a great listen. And another one here saying, Casper was brilliant, always operating within millimeters of failure, then has to rapidly reset. I also love the challenge of his dad to verbalise winning the Premier League at his old school. A great start. I look forward to the ones that are to follow. The key bit for me there is operating within millimetres of failure, then rapidly resetting. It's about the reaction to the failure, not just accepting the failure.
Yeah, there's always that gap between the event and your response to it. And it's that gap that defines how you're going to deal with this, whether high performance is coming your way or whether you're stuck where you are. And it's how we reset, how we reframe it, and how we reflect on it. That all happens in that pause, that brief gap between the event and our response.
Thanks to the lovely comment as well, saying, guys, I love your podcast, some serious gems in there, but I really found Casper's interview beneficial. What a mindset. It seems like a genuine down-to-earth guy. And I like this one as well. And I hadn't really thought about this, Damien. This is from Dean on Instagram. He said, I really believe what Casper has done is somewhat more impressive than others because he's never needed to do what he's done. Everyone in their own right has an incredible story, but to be that motivated when he actually didn't need to be, it was obviously referring to his dad's success there and the fact that I guess Casper would be, you know, financially okay even if he didn't play football. He says he was always going to be compared to his dad. And then this is the bit I hadn't really picked up on. He was always going to be compared to his dad, similar to Eddie Hearn. I find these guys so inspiring. And I hadn't really made that link really between Eddie and Casper, but when Dean picks up on that, he's absolutely right, isn't he? These are people that still went for it wholeheartedly, full of passion and belief, despite the great opportunities they were already given in life.
Yeah, and you're right, I hadn't sort of made that connection either until you've just said it. But I think what's really interesting is both Casper and Eddie spoke about they'd seen the struggles, the sacrifice and the hard work that went on in the shadows. And that was the bit they were in love with. That's what ignited their passion. It wasn't about being rich or playing on the grandest stages. That was the outcome from it. But they actually loved the hard work and the commitment to get there. And that's what they fell in love with. And I think that's a really important message for anyone listening to this to understand. Don't just fall in love with the trappings of success or high performance. It's the journey to get there that is the route that's going to sustain you. Falling in love at that stage is key.
And I can't say this often enough. Take responsibility. You know, be really honest with yourself and take a look and go, right, the reason I'm not where I want to be, is it because of circumstance or is it because of application? And I think both of those guys, Eddie and Casper, are the kind of, they're the total flip reverse of someone who's blaming opportunity or circumstances they're brought up in a negative way. They could have done it in a positive way. They could have said, well, what's the point, man? I know I'm going to be financially sound. But they didn't do that.
Yeah, they started with a passion. They identified what they wanted to do. And then, as you say, they took complete responsibility for how they were going to commit to a goal or a task.
Listen, it's always lovely to sit and chat, Damien. I could go through these comments from people for hours. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you to everyone at home. We have...
Absolutely.
We've certainly hit the ground running for Series 4 with a big impact. Hundreds of thousands of downloads and listens and views already across our social media, across the podcast. So thank you all very much for that, especially if you're new to the High Performance Podcast. Getting new people coming onto this is really brilliant for us. And we really love it when you share what you're learning and what you're hearing. So please, if you've been inspired, yeah, great, rate, review it, check us out on Instagram, on YouTube. But please, if you can, share it with other people, because I can promise you there is someone out there right now feeling negative, feeling like they're struggling, feeling like they want some inspiration and they don't know where to turn. And perhaps you sharing this podcast with them or on your socials or wherever might just make the difference in their lives. Huge thanks as always to Hannah and Will for all of their hard work. Of course, the wind beneath my wings, Damien Hughes. We couldn't do this without the professor. And also big thanks as well to Tom Griffin from Rethink Audio for his hard work creating the pod. And I should also say a massive thanks to Josh Warrington as well. And we wish him all the best in his upcoming fight. And I tell you what, before we go, I'll just give you a little sneaky treat, because next week's guest is someone who's very much in the public eye and being spoken about at the moment, the England rugby manager, Eddie Jones. Here's a sneaky listen to what you can expect next week.
On a case of perfect game. Imagine going out there and you're impossible to play against, impossible. When you've got the ball, they can't get it off you. When they've got the ball, they've got so much pressure, they're giving it back to you, and that's unrelenting. That'd be fascinating.
Oh, I can't wait for that. He is a high-performance individual, and so are you for listening to this podcast. So have a brilliant next few days. Go out into the world, spread the word, spread positivity, and enjoy the feeling of living a high-performance life. See ya.